Welcome back to this episode of Encore Conversations on Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Essayist and poet John Freeman started a literary journal in 2015 called Freeman's. He teaches writing at the New School in New York City. He's also executive editor at Lit Hub. We had quite a lovely conversation in October of 2017. Essayist and story writer Garnett Cadogan joined us too. And John explained why Freeman's is focused on the future of new writing.
I think new writing is always interesting to us because it puts a kind of language to what's happening in the world. And so writing is always a tiny bit ahead of what we think of as reality. And so we look to new writers to explain the world to us in stories. And so I looked in this issue at writers from around the world, from China, from Japan, from Argentina, writers from the United States, from England. And their writing style is, yes, very lucid, but a lot of them are not writing, quote unquote, realistic fiction, if you could call it that.
Garnett, you and John have a close friendship, but you have a close collaboration. I know in the past some of your stories emerge because you two are talking.
Yes.
I imagine over coffee or something.
Yes. Coffee or drinks, or sometimes just walking together in New York streets and taking in things with all the different sensations that we're enjoying and things that pull stories out of you, that it sometimes feels when the city is bursting with epiphany, you then begin having different epiphanies from experiences you had. And John will say, write that down, or write that, or have you written about that yet? Time and again, out of our conversations come stories that are told but untold on paper.
So from your perspective, Garnett, what do you see as his filter or his criteria for what he wants the world to read in the journals?
One of the things that John is insistent on is stories that don't stop at the water's edge, stories that expand our notion of what it means to be human, of what it means to listen to each other, of what it means to play with language and play with form, you know, what it means to get things out of our blind spots, to look at the many different ways of being in the world and enjoying it and understanding it and being challenged by it. Stories that are right before us, but we might be missing, but stories that are essential.
Stories that might be about something right in front of us, but we're missing, is a great description. Some of these stories are about shrimp or a man named Robin or a heartbeat. And I think they're original. Supposedly stories aren't original, that everything's been said or written, but the way some of these stories are told about something very ordinary and everyday actually can make a person catch their breath, I think, John.
That's the goal. I mean, I want people to be arrested by what they read, to be moved by it. And sometimes on the part of the writer, it just means looking a little bit to the left of the target. So the story you mentioned about shrimp is by a Mexican journalist who has done some of the most brave reporting about narco violence in his country and the cost of that in human terms, families destroyed, broken up. And he's reporting from a festival in one of the towns that has the worst experience with narco violence in Mexico. And to basically help the public forget about that, they decide to build the world's biggest ever shrimp cocktail. It's something like 1,700 pounds of shrimp. And, you know, he just basically describes the festival. And over to the right, towards the very end of the piece, he starts to acknowledge what the festival is trying to cover up. And I think that's how we operate as individuals. The other story you mentioned about the heartbeat, this is a way to think about possession. The way that when you fall in love, you don't just want to be near someone, you want to possess them, their very blood and heartbeat. So the best writers in the world, I think, come up with creative ways to get us to think about what they want us to think about by turning a little bit to the side.
I find the stories captivating. We really need to hear one. So Garnett, would you share some of your work? And I know you're prepared to do a bit of a reading. And your story came originally from an essay, didn't it?
Yes. And one of the things, again, that John does is he likes reorienting us towards the mundane, the things that we think of as mundane, that he has this firm belief, like all good editors, that there is nothing that's really mundane. It's just our inability to see how the commonplace carries with it such rich meanings. And so I just took two characters that we're all too accustomed to and shown the ways in which they were more than the mundane or commonplace for me. Back then, hammered upon my fists, I took cover on the fantasy. I clung to my imagination in order to survive. A brutal stepfather and bystander mother made life miserable to unbearable, and so my wish was to be someone else. As far as I was aware, no one my age was dealing with the outpouring of fire and brimstone I longed to escape, so I had no choice but to take flight in my head. Often, when I got a reprieve from the pendulum crash of my stepfather's thumpy knuckles, I would daydream a normal life. More often, I dream about being Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee, the character. He of Fists of Fury and Enter the Dragon fame. Lithe, super fit, ready to enact punishment on his enemies with breakneck speed and assured style. I wanted to be a character, the character, that could readily defend himself and inflict pain on the stepfather who entered his home like a wrecking ball, ready to leave it in ruins. Little, puny, bruised me found comfort in the reverie of revenge. Scene after scene of me sidekicking my stepfather's face, slamming him to the ground with my extraordinary kung fu technique and merciless force. But I was nurtured by a grandmother who thought revenge was the worst sort of failure. You were giving too much time to someone who had already taken away too much. Perhaps that explains why my other childhood hero was Charlie Brown. Here was a kid who, week after week when I met him in the Peanuts comic strip, with his funny gang of exuberant kids and their animal companions, was teased and mocked and bullied, but somehow, insecure and anxious though he could sometimes be, he pressed on. Call him blockhead. Pull a football away from him time and time and time again. Humiliate him. This kind-hearted, lovable loser would not contort from who he was to hotly confront the world. He would persevere, maybe even kick that ball someday. In him was a courage harder to grasp, near impossible for me to imitate.
Garnett Cadogan, he's reading from his story With Nothing to Hide. That is in Freeman's Literary Journal. The focus of this journal is the future of new writing. So you grew up in Jamaica, but it struck me that you were reading Peanuts. You were reading Charlie Brown
in Jamaica. Yes, obsessively.
And watching Bruce Lee.
Yes.
And there's one other character in your story that I should bring up. It's a character that some people know from a children's song by Raffi, but it's Anansi, the spider.
Yes.
And will you just give a little of the color of what Anansi was and how you took that character in?
He was a folk tale character. And the way Anansi worked, he was a trickster figure who, in the folk tales I encountered, was the star character who always, through some wiles and through, you know, wonderful sleight of hand and slickness, would always get away from people trying to oppress or deceive or eat him. And he would always have the upper hand with his own deceit and to find his way out of it to victory or safety. And so in him, I found this character that became a model for me of how to deal with dangerous situations or unsafe situations or places in which I felt that I needed to move to safe ground.
You became a trickster, and you describe in the story some of where your life went. I find it really beautiful then to watch the unwrapping that happened around you with people who loved you, in being able to see that that couldn't be a long-term plan for success.
Yes. Yes, and one of the things I was interested in with this story is to talk about the ways in which personas can actually become the person and the danger of personas which initially are a costume can fuse to you and suddenly it's no longer a costume. You've become the persona.
So, John, these new voices are very contemporary. In these stories, there's a reference to the MP3 player or to Twitter or texting or Facebook. So all of the work, and a lot of it's translated from other languages, is coming in and about the world right now. I can't help but think, because of the times we're in, what might be just on the verge of being written because of what's happening in the United States and around the world.
Yeah, that's the big question I think we're all wondering about, because we're in this enormous period of migration. There's lots of conflict around the world, conflict within these borders. And my hope was to try to grab the writers who might be the people who could figure out how to tell stories into this space. I think the news cycle, as you know, more than the two of us, moves so fast. You're constantly in a state of discoherence, of kind of shock, and you're trying to catch up to things. And I think really good stories can almost put that whole element of trying to keep up to the side and dial us back to a, not a mythic register, but something that feels a bit more elemental. And so even if the story, in one case, there's a Chinese writer in the issue who's a former provincial policeman, and two policemen who are sort of like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of China go off to a factory in search of a missing wheel, which sounds absurd, but it's a fantastic story about bureaucracy. And so, you know, someone sitting here in the capital might relate to it, even though it's come from a long, long, long way away. And that's sort of the hope of this collection, is to try to put things in a contemporary context, but also say, we, you know, when we read, can become anybody. We can, and that's what good writing does. And if we believe that, what does that say about the world? What does that say about how we should operate as individuals?
That was my October 2017 conversation with John Freeman and Garnett Cadogan. You can hear more of Insight's 15th birthday celebration shows at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.